Good afternoon, Sláinte, and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM. My name is Scotty Hertz. And yes, welcome. Welcome once again. Broadcasting live from the secret bunker, where it is nice and cool so far, but we'll see at the end of the heat wave, at the end of the week. And joining me from his possibly secret bunker, although we're not sure, is Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, our chief assignment editor. Adam, are you with us?
I am now.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. We had to hook up an old, it's a Soviet piece of equipment that was behind, you know, it's just rush around, throw some wires together, and boom, then you have radio. So, back in black. Thanks for joining us, Adam. I did introduce you off the top there, as you may or may not have heard. I don't think you did, but anyway. Such is the live remote radio. Is just that this is how it all goes down these days. So, how are you doing where you are at, Adam?
Hot. I'm hot.
Hot? Hot stuff. Yeah. Check it and see? No, that's hot.
I had to shut off all my fans so I could sound decent on the radio before we had to, you know, hook up all the Cold War era gear, but
so you don't sound like you're coming from the International Space Station. But so fans are off. We'll talk faster then, so you know you'll be able to get at it sooner. Did I mention the topics? I don't think I did because we didn't get to them. So the politics of the mask and everything that goes with that, we will be talking about in the second half. Also, the bounty on American soldiers, alleged bounty on American soldiers in Afghanistan via Russia, question mark? Very suspicious. So, of course, we love a good espionage story, and we'll be talking about that in part two. Outsourcing a government contract to a charity with, just directly, the charity is we, the outsourcer is the Liberal government, and the charity is has connections with all the Trudeaus, it sounds like, except maybe the kids, maybe the babies. I'm not sure. Anyway, we'll get to that. But off the top, Canada Day plus one, a day where we celebrate the nation, although this year the celebrations were a little bit different. I would put celebration with an asterisk. And one of the situations that's been going on locally, not just in the past day or two or past couple weeks, but it would seem over a period of years, is the statue of John A. Macdonald that is in Baden at Castle Kilbride. Is that right? On the property of the Castle Kilbride, which was a mansion built by a Liberal MP, interestingly, as something that they like to celebrate in Canada, something that kind of goes in with the Canada Day thing, that whole self-made settler man builds a big mansion, and he's long gone, 100 years probably, and now there's the plan is to put a series of statues of prime ministers on the grounds there, which is now a park. Now, of course, nobody is worried about the Lester Pearson statue that I believe is there. However, John A. has been getting painted up several times the past week or two, and at one point the statue was covered with a tarpaulin, and several attempts have been made to clean it by various people. One seemed like just a guy, another seemed like a bike gang of some sort, and there are also protesters. I believe they may I don't know what you've heard, Adam. Maybe they're still there sitting around the statue, lobbying very hard for this thing to come down. So what have you heard?
Well, we got pretty much everything I've heard. I would point out this isn't just a Baden phenomenon. There's a, you know, there are statues of John A. Macdonald almost literally all over the place. There's one in Regina that's been getting the paint treatment, and the city council of Regina took the step of putting a sign on the statue. The post-millennial lovingly called it a trigger warning.
Oh, jeez. Surprise. No surprise there.
What it is, though, is a it's an invitation of sorts of city council saying, like, we want to have a conversation about how we should treat these things going forward, these statues of John A. Macdonald, who, yes, is the first Prime Minister of Canada, but at the same time is also one of the authors of the residential school system, and once said on the topic of giving Indigenous people financial aid, I have reason to believe, and this is a quote, that the agents as a whole, one day, all they can do by reinforcing food until the Indians are on the verge of starvation to reduce expenses. So he's basically talking about starving Indigenous peoples as a way to save money there. So you know, he was a real, you know, to be generous, piece of work, John A. McDonald. So, yeah, Regina is saying, like, look, it's part of our history. We want to put it in context, reaching out to Indigenous people and community leaders in Regina, saying, what, you know, give us suggestions on what we can do. I think Queen's University is on a similar kind of trajectory right now with McDonald Hall, which is the name of the law school building at Queen's. They're in the process of reviewing whether that they should rename that. Famously, John A. McDonald is from Kingston, but other than that, he really has no connection to the Queen's Law School. And then you have Baden here. And one thing you didn't mention about Baden is that it's been a little town in Waterloo Region. Is it's been the epicenter of not one, but two controversies in the last week, because the mayor of Wilmot Township, Les Armstrong, shared a post on social media that implied that Black Lives Matter was a scam, as in it was some kind of flim-flam hustle of a movement. And in that same post, it had the hashtag White Lives Matter, which is largely be seen as a white nationalist response to Black Lives Matter. Basically hit the retweet or share function. And I mean, his public apologies have been kind of weak. I don't know what's been happening behind the scenes, because they had closed meetings on both Monday and Tuesday in Wilmot Township, which I imagine involved browbeating Les Armstrong via virtual telepresence. But, you know, there has not been a lot of information shared about that, about, you know, what went on behind the scenes. And I will say that his apologies have been rather tepid and seem to not fully appreciate what he did was not kosher. It's interesting that these sort of two controversies are now competing in this one small Ontario town. It seems to sum up everything about what's going on in the movement right now.
Yep. Sounds like Guy's just not getting it. And hopefully his meetings will lead to something like anti-oppression, anti-bias, and anti-racist training. But it's unlikely, although you never know if they will even be able to sanction him for such ridiculous comments. Obviously, just...
No, but there isn't a complaint to the Integrity Commissioner at Waterloo Region, where he's a member of the Waterloo Region Council, being mayor of Wilmot. So there will be some sort of review process, as somebody has made a complaint to the Waterloo Region Integrity Commissioner. But again, there's no kind of public trial for that. It's largely just the Integrity Commissioner sending out some emails and talking to people by phone.
Right. So back on the street with it's not even the war on the statues. It sounds like a Doctor Who episode or something, the attack of the statues or something. It's not really surprising, as you had said about and that's one of many John A. McDonald quotes in terms of how he felt about Indigenous people. And I'm sure if we went through the Hansard record from probably 1867 on, there'd be lots of unsavory things in there. Interestingly, with the statue being on the campus of Laurier, another prime minister that is being, you know, subject to, let's say, a deeper analysis, because he also in turn was very, let's just say, had some racist notions. It's amazing to me how the reaction doesn't amaze me, but it's the defense of these statues and not wanting to talk about the issue, or we have to keep it argument, to me just doesn't wash at all. I think considering what has gone on and having to defend this person, knowing full well what his record is. The arguments will be, well, we need to preserve history and we need to keep this at all costs. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think my own personal feeling is that it couldn't hurt if they were going to keep it, to just leave the red paint on it, right? There's a statue in terms of attacks on statues. There's a statue in Glasgow of the Duke of Wellington. And of course, our county and our area here, Wellington this, we've got a brewery named Wellington. The namesake is around. That mm-hmm. statue for years has been, they've stuck a, they stick a road cone on it, a pylon as they call it there. So he has this hat all of the time, permanently. If the hat disappears, people get angry. Last week, the hat on the Wellington disappeared. I don't know if they were trying to clean up the statue or it was somebody else pulling a prank as well. The people around took every single cone they could find and put it on Wellington's head. Now, there's a statue that has been tuned up. I don't know Duke of Wellington's history, but I mean, I'm sure in terms of colonizers and all of that stuff, all of that history, Victorian history, history prior to, well, the now, I guess, you will find this with anybody that there is a statue of, I would hazard a guess. And people shouldn't be that surprised, but the conversation, I think it's difficult to have the conversation now because of COVID. And it's interesting how COVID has driven the conversation, but yet it's also, you can't really have that sit down conversation because everything's on Zoom and whatnot, right? So, this statue in particular had been the whole statue scheme, I guess we'll call it, was supposed to be in Victoria Park. And I think it got nixed. 79% of people said they didn't like the concept, and that was back in 2014. Interestingly, some of the statues that were suggested were RoboCop and Taco Bell, which isn't really a statue. Somebody said there should be more Taco Bells and less statues. So there's a bit of humor in that. And I know it's not a humorous topic, obviously, but it's interesting how, you know, the responses to this were like, this is some 80% of people surveyed said, please don't put the statues in Victoria Park. We've also heard, you've probably heard that in Sudbury too, in the, it was Our Lady of Lourdes, several religious statues were beheaded. Mm. Now, as to, they haven't actually proven whether that was somebody making a political statement or just taking the heads for scrap, which is a possibility. That has happened in the past. So they haven't proven what has gone on there, but considering the history of the, again, residential schools, the sexual abuse scandals that have gone on in the Catholic Church, it would not surprise me at all if somebody, as a political statement, considering the times, went and decapitated those things and has absolutely no regrets about it. The heads weren't left behind. So,
right. Which, the heads not being left behind is kind of interesting. There are two sort of streams going on. There are the people who are going after, you know, the McDonald's statues or the colonialist statues, the Confederate statues in the United States, which I think people have come to appreciate as, for lack of a better term, fair game. But at the same time, there are people, as there often are in these moments, who see political civil disobedience happening and decide to use that as a coverall to just be jerks, to just be like regular run-of-the-mill vandals. And I think there's some of that happening too. It's like, yeah, we can go out and wreck this place because people are going to think it's BLM protesters. And so there's that going on too. The case of the Prime Minister's Path, though, you're right, it did start out, they wanted to put in Victoria Park in Kitchener. People did not like that idea. They then looked to installing it at Wilfrid Laurier. But there was a backlash from students and faculty that was probably not a good idea to put it there. So they put it on the Castle Kilby property. There was kind of, because it's private property, so there was no real public discussion or debate like at the township council or the region of Waterloo or wherever. So it just kind of ended up there. So it's interesting that we have this belated debate now, it seems. And yeah, this is why I brought up the Regina, the quote unquote the Regina option. But you know, putting up a sign saying like, "Look, we're looking at this. We're talking to all the right people to make a decision about this. But it's going to take time.
Please don't take his head, please don't paint."
Pretty much, because you know the Wilmot has tried everything. They left the paint on. Somebody came and cleaned it off anyway. They tried to wrap it up with that tarpaulin. And there was outrage about that. It's just like, here's this big, ugly tarpaulin statue now in the park. It's just, I think the best of all options is to say, here is a venue by which you can tell us your feedback. We are doing our own research by going to the appropriate people, indigenous people, marginalized communities, asking what we should do. It's very clear that, you know, people want to recognize the history, yes, but there needs to be greater context. Statues out in public do not offer context. They just sit there and an option to be found to go forward. And I think if people see, well, this is a matter of, you can't go in camera, you can't really talk about this on the DL. People have to see you talk about it. They have to know you are taking direction. And I think that's why things have been so dicey in Wilmot Township the last week.
Yeah, and heading further west, the city of Victoria took the statue of John A. away from the front of their city hall. Mm-hmm. I think it was an effort to echoing the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and again, after much discussion. But see, was that so hard, though? I don't know. I actually don't know where it ended up. I don't think it ended up as scrap or decapitated. It was just removed. It's like, we're going to put it over here. And you're exactly right. These things without context don't really mean anything. And then, of course, we apply the context to it when we see it, whatever our background is. But again, an evolving story because it's, as you say, it's not just here. It's like all over North America, actually all over the world currently. Everybody from Rhodes to you name the name. They're digging into the background, and something's probably going to happen. Churchill, too, in London, that's quite the statue. We're going to have to leave the statue story there, but I'm sure we'll come back to it. Out of Ottawa, there's been an interesting development with a contract that has been issued directly to a charity group. The charity group is We, run by the Kielberger brothers, Craig and Mark. This contract was put out without any tender, as they say, in the business. It was decided, it would seem that the staff decided, according to Justin Trudeau in Ottawa, that the WE organization was the best to administer a $900 million program, which will give money to students who do up to 500 hours of volunteer work. I guess they are eligible for up to $5,000. $900 million program. The company itself will get $19.5 million in administrative fees. Supposedly, they're doing this as what they call a white label operation, which is, we're just going to deliver this. We're going to take X amount of money to do it. And there's no net gain for us. It's sort of, I guess, as a nonprofit, they're just doing it out of the good of their hearts. Or are they? And that is the question. So what do we know about WE, Adam? And well, we know there's a relationship with them and the Trudeaus, but...
Right. Well, just to start off with, it is not unusual for organizations to take administrative fees because in order to implement programs and grants, because of that is additional work that's put on staff. And a lot of these nonprofits do, you know, work rather skeletally and with minimum resources. So it is fair that I think the problem here, as you alluded to, is the relationship between WE, which started as the Free the Children. I can't remember which Kielberger was super dedicated to helping kids in Africa, but...
It was Craig. It's like Craig was the face of it, and Mark is the guy behind the scenes you don't really see, but it was right. Mark Kielberger that said, and he said it was a slip of the tongue, that they were asked directly by the Prime Minister's office back in April to do this program, and then he backtracked. He said, no, actually, it wasn't the PMO's office at all. But it's so he was playing it up. It sounds like he's playing it up a little bit, whether consciously or unconsciously, and then backtracked. And now it's like both. It's one of those unusual situations where the NDP and the Conservatives are completely on the same page, going after the Liberals and saying, "What's the story with this?" So,
yeah, it's completely shady. It's one of these things that people hate about government. You know, it seems like backroom deals, friends giving friends, contracts, especially when you're talking about almost $1 billion. And, you know, that's not chump change. And there are big questions about why does the government need WE to do this? Isn't the government, you know, there to implement big $1 billion programs to students? Doesn't the government already administer a program where it gives students money on an annual basis, actually twice annually, because of the semesters?
Yep.
It doesn't the government already administer that kind of program? Huh. You know, not ringing any bells. I guess we have to go with WE. But yeah, it feels bad. Like WE is one of these platforms, you know, that gave Trudeau kind of that celebrity cult status. You know, you have Sophie Gregoire Trudeau, you know, being one of the brand ambassadors, hosting a podcast. That doesn't pass the smell test. And then Nora Loretto is tweeting today that she's this week's episode of Nora and Sandy dealt with, in part, the controversy about we, that her DMs have been blowing up because people are sending her, sort of inside info that one of the things that we does, incidentally or on purpose, is that it funnels youth activists into the Liberal Party. All these people these young people who are, dedicated to community service and making the world a better place. And, while they're going to these WE events, there's a Liberal Party of Canada table there at the side saying, hey, you want to keep doing cool stuff? Come to the Liberal Party.
And CanadaLand did that expose, and it was like a couple of years ago, or maybe just last year, about how there's a lot of disgruntled people who leave WE thinking that they were going to get involved in doing volunteer work and all those good things. And that turns out that goods were not as shown, I guess. I guess we need to watch too. I mean, we'll probably be okay, but it sounds like they're also a bit litigious and will sue people that say, make disparaging remarks about them. Well, we should probably be okay. But not, I mean, we as in us, not we as in we. It's kind of a ridiculous name to me, think about it. But what was interesting to me with this is, first of all, what are the volunteering things that kids, young people can do right now?
Mm-hmm.
There's not many opportunities. It's all, you're doing it all at home. So if the idea was to give people experience doing things within the community, severely curtailed, severely restricted by the restrictions that are going on, that within the period of what this program, I think it's supposed to go to October, this program. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I'm sure you remember the times, Adam, and many of our listeners do, when you just did volunteer work for nothing. You just went and did it, right?
Well, that's fair. This is kind of like an ad hoc jobs program too, because there are so many young people who typically work summer jobs, and there are no summer jobs this year because of COVID. So,
right. So the question would be, why not just call it that? Rather than say, well, it's for volunteering. Are young people going to expect to be paid for volunteer gigs all the time now? I don't know.
Has always been my issue with the Kielbergers and WE is that it's not enough to volunteer and be active in your community. It has to come with a reward. And what WE has done in the past is you get a certain number of hours volunteering in your community, and you get invited to this big WE party, and they have one in Toronto, they have one in Kitchener, they have one all over the place where you get to see.
And somebody, a known or somebody famous, comes and gives a talk, right?
And special guests like the Prime Minister, and it's this cool hangout. And what it does is it sells young people on this idea that volunteering is cool. You will be rewarded with all this awesome stuff. And, of course, people are going to get disillusioned by that when they get out into the community and you're working at the food bank and it's just a slog because you're at a food bank, right? And they've always been kind of this, upselling the idea of volunteerism. I think a lot, but I think part of the culture of slacktivism can be traced back to the Kielbergers, that all you have to do is be really super enthusiastic and be really excited and sell people on the idea that it's cool and hip and swag to volunteer. And, we can fix the world's problems when things, actually require you a lot of effort, and people get burned out and people get sick and tired and people sell out because at the end of the day, working at the food bank barely pays the bills. So they've always been kind of hucksters in that regard. I've always felt, not to say that they are genuinely hucksters, but I just feel like they're selling young people on a version of volunteerism that just isn't practical once you get outside of the WE sphere.
Yeah, to me, it seems like a monetized version, which is sort of the antithesis of what volunteering was about. But it's interesting you mentioned the food bank, because that was Justin Trudeau's defense of this. He said, well, when we want to help the food banks, we go to Food Banks Canada, which is the body that oversees a lot of them, I assume. Or if we want to help community groups, we go directly to the United Way. He was trying to say that there are certain organizations that they will go directly to rather than try and figure out who is best to deliver this. And like I had said off the top there, according to the staff, as he says, there's a bit of a deflection going on there. According to the staff in Ottawa, the WE organization seemed like the best ones to do this. I've got a feeling that there are probably other organizations in Canada that could do it. Maybe not as well known as the Keelburgers, but to just give it to them, and considering the times and the circumstances, and as the Conservatives and the NDP, and I would assume the Greens as well, have been saying in terms of accountability for money, like you had said, this is almost $1 billion. It's like, okay, Keelburgers, go to it and get at it, and we know you can do this. And it does smell a little bit bad, and I wonder where this is going to go. I think
it just looks so bad. And if it was all on the up and up, and who knows, maybe it was. Maybe this literally came from a suggestion from the senior staff of the civil service. I don't know. But if it had been super legit, and if they had done their homework, and if there were legitimate reasons why we was chosen, it would have been part of the original announcement. Trudeau would have said, we're unrolling this program, we're leaving the administration to the We charities, we've done our research, here's all this background info that the civil service has done into it, and we're going to leave it to them to administer. And they could have made up some BS reason, like, see, we're government doesn't have to do everything. We're farming out work to, you know, private enterprises. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It just the fact that it clearly.
Well, and the optics too of the entire family volunteering there, as well as Margaret. I mean, I'm sure the kids, if Margaret Trudeau is the one that comes, they go, "Who's this again?" Oh, yeah, it's Justin's mom, right? So her and Sophie, who caught COVID on the Wii mission, right? If they weren't so deeply involved, then supposedly they don't take any money for being involved. I'm sure the lunch is probably provided. Maybe, I don't know. Says they don't take any money for what they do, but I would think if the three of them weren't so deeply involved, it might not seem as fishy. But so we'll leave it at fishy, and I think we're probably going to come back to this topic at some point. I have a really good hunch that we will. You're listening to Open Sources, Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM. We are going to take a slightly shorter break and be back in 2 or 3 minutes to discuss the topics of the day even further. So stay tuned. Anyway, speaking of heat, the heat is on several people, organizations, shady, some not so shady. There is a possible shadow war going on in Afghanistan. As to whether it's still going on, we are not sure. There was a story in the New York Times, which blew wide open this week, that supposedly there were Russian agents paying the Taliban or other shady operators, including it sounds like a drug dealer, to pay bounties on American soldiers. So the deal was, allegedly, that if the Taliban could take out an American soldier, then they would get a financial reward. And it seems that the middleman in the middle of this took off to, I guess people were on his tail. He took off to Russia. And I believe it was his brother was found in a house with $500,000 US. And this is the event that blew the lid off this story. Supposedly there was a Taliban spokesperson, unnamed, but on the record, I guess, saying that the Russian intel has been paying for attacks on the U.S. and ISIS since 2014. So it's not as if this is supposedly a news story. This has been on the radar for a while. And it looks like, well, it doesn't look like, but Trump has ended up in the middle of it because there's the back and forth as to whether he knew about it, he didn't know about it. And I'm sure there was more happened on that today, Adam, no doubt, or...
I think the details are sort of becoming more entrenched. The White House announced today that Trump got a briefing this morning, so they're trying to make it seem like he's kind of on top of it.
He's the most informed person on planet Earth, right? He knows everything. That was such a great line. One of those classic like alternative facts lines. It's like, he's the most informed person on planet Earth.
Yeah,
whether that information sinks in or not, nobody's really too sure about that. But he might hear it, but it might be like that Charlie Brown teacher style, which is wah, 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 and all he hears is re-election, I think, at this point.
Right, yeah. It's one of these stories that has kind of, you know, taken everything we know about the Trump administration and sort of galvanized it and solidified it. Because, of course, one of the things we've known from the Russia investigation that anytime Russia would come up in the intelligence briefings, Trump would get angry. He would get angry at the mention of Russia in the Russia investigation. He called it a Russian hoax. He believed Putin. That famous press conference in Helsinki where he said, I asked Putin if he interfered in the 2016 election. He told me he didn't.
That's right.
I don't know why he would lie. There's such a Svengali thing between Putin and Trump that you have no, like, just, I was thinking about that Helsinki press conference as this story was breaking, and how the doors open, Vladimir Putin comes striding out with a smirk on his face.
That's right, yeah.
You know, it was like he just got laid for the first time in 3 years, and then Trump is, like, shuffling behind him, back hunched over, you know, scowl on his face, his arms hanging down.
Yeah, it's like he has been told, do not worry, yeah.
Yeah, like he just came out of the principal's office. And it makes you wonder what happened behind closed doors. We don't know, because Trump took the notes from the interpreter. It's another big thing that makes you wonder about the exact nature of the relationship. There were all the phone calls. The Kremlin announces when he and Trump have phone calls. The White House does not. And then this is kind of like what I hope is maybe the last straw, because this isn't just about what does Putin have on Trump. This is about why doesn't Trump act to save American lives? Because there were 22 American soldiers who were killed in Afghanistan last year. And now those 22 families are sitting at home wondering, was there a bounty on my kid or my brother or my sister or my dad or my mom or you know, whatever the familial connection is? And that has not, there has not been an answer to that. And on top of that, Donald Trump has not said word one about what the American response will be, and in fact has come right out and said this is another hoax. And that, you know, these are kind of core problems before we get into the fact that this has been going on apparently for years, that John Bolton apparently tried to tell, according to him. I'm not sure how much to believe John Bolton, if he's just sort of like piling on.
Oh yeah, I think I would believe him above Trump at this point.
Fair enough.
Even though he's from the fold. But yeah, I would definitely.
Yeah, but, you know, John Bolton apparently told him last March. The notes and the investigation into this have been sitting in the presidential daily brief that he does not read. At the best of times, he gets a verbal briefing once or twice a week. And there's been reporting today that his staff has been going out of their way to not give him bad news about Russia. And it's become a learned action that even the intelligence professionals, they don't want that fight. They don't want to sit there with the toddler as he smashes his fists on the table and complains about how he doesn't want to eat his vegetables, which in this case is bad news about Russia. So it's just everything that, you know, sort of makes people sweat about Trump's connections to Russia, this kind of just is emblematic of all of it.
Yes, and that's definitely one constant about Trump. It's well known that he does not like bad news. And the one thing that he does really like is things that that make him look good, right? He always wants to, some kind of like, oh, this is great. Everything's great. It's tremendous. Well, we know the Trump shtick. We know the routine. But yeah, something else. John Bolton had said that. John Bolton came out and said Trump is not disconnected, but unconnected from reality. It's as if Trump has his own. Well, he does. He has his own sort of field of operation that he's on, and everybody else is like, well, including. I mean. Not just, he's continuously blaming the Democrats. And we saw a bit of that where it's like, when Biden was VP, never punished the Taliban. Somehow Trump gets a line in about Hunter. We haven't heard the Hunter line in a long time. And this week he's like, well, what about Hunter? It's not getting ridiculous. We're all past the point of like super ridiculous. But with this disconnection, as Bolton and others have called it, it's like, it's never, ever going to be right. And he's just, as you said, he called it a hoax, which is typical. Anything that doesn't fit the narrative, his narrative, is a hoax. It would seem that in the daily press briefing, there was a write-up about this. So, and Pompeo was, he's like, well, the president is completely, he said, put it this way, he said Trump is constantly aware of the challenges. Now, that's different from being constantly aware of everything and being the most important person most well-informed person on the planet. Those are really different things. So I think almost everyone in the White House knows how to choose their words really well, whereas Trump is just continuously just firing from the hip, hoping that McEnany or somebody will cover for him, right? And she seems to be handling it. But how many press secretaries have they been through so far, right? She must be in on writing the briefing, I would imagine, right? Maybe not, but 6'10", Spicy, and all those people are just all gone. She's the new face. So it's, will she be the last face of the Trump administration at the podium? We don't know.
Well, the thing is about Kayleigh McEnany, she's always made like a cynical calculation about Trump, going back to 2015. She was, among the members of the conservative intelligentsia, let's say, that, did not buy Donald Trump's shtick or did not see him as a qualified leader. And somebody told her, hey, you can make a lot of money being a Trump booster at this time. And she took that advice. So she's been shoveling it for a while. And so she's well practiced at it. So, I mean,
an opportunist of sorts, eh? Yeah.
That's not a press briefing. It's a performance. She's playing, press secretary on the Trump TV show for the audience of one. And it's really hard to. I would pay $1 million if somebody in that White House press briefing just said to her after she says something ridiculous, like, if they just said, just ask the one question, how stupid do you think we are? I would love to see that. But of course, they're not going to do that.
Or somebody finally loses it and does the, come on, from the back or something, right? You don't know who it is because they've got masks on. It's like that. It's entirely possible considering the slapstick that's going on with this. I'm not sure where this story is going to go. Like, there seems to be more information coming out, and
well, yeah, the big story today was that the Gang of Eight got their briefing, and it was from actual intelligence officials as opposed to the briefing that congressional Republicans got on Monday or Tuesday, which was apparently done by political staff at the White House,
not the CIA, or yeah.
No,
like it was just so basically, the kids.
Basically, they were getting talking points about how they could talk around this. But, there are Republicans among them, Dan Crenshaw and Liz Cheney, who have expressed concern about this news. Whether or not they have actual desire to do anything about it is another question entirely. I somehow doubt it this close to the election. But, yeah, it's difficult to know where this story is going to go. Because it's probably going to go nowhere until after, with the exception of like attack ads and things, which have already come out, in terms of actually getting to the bottom of this, there's going to be nothing until if and when Donald Trump loses the election.
Yeah. And it sounds like the soldiers in the UK were targeted in this as well. and maybe some info will come out from that. And I don't know, I guess I'll keep an eye on that because I guess the UK file is my file most of the time. But yes, daily, in fact. But
should add to that, Vladimir Putin was elected dictator for life this week.
Yeah, what's the year? 2036?
Yeah.
Where he will be a head in a jar, just sort of with a couple of electrodes going, yes, wonderful. 2036, eh? Yeah, and what else came out of that, too, was the same-sex marriage. No, you can't have that.
Yeah, that's been a big controversy in Moscow because the Canadian embassy there has been flying a pride flag, which is...
I was like, how dare she interfere in this?
Yeah.
I think that's what I'd heard, yeah.
Kind of hilarious coming from Russia.
Well, I guess with the
how
deep...
How dare you interfere with Russia?
The
We're
deep,
interfering
deep...
with you.
Deep ties to the Orthodox Church there, and they definitely don't like rainbow flags and anything to do with pride. So there's a side story there and a very serious one at that too, but we'll see where that goes and how long Vladimir actually lives, because that would be well into his 80s if that was the case, right, I would imagine?
Yeah, he's in his 50s right now, right?
Oh, I think he's older than that, but he's old enough to have been a KGB agent. But anyway, I guess that's a topic for another day. But still speaking of Trump, I guess it sounded like today Trump had caved on the mask issue a little bit. Well, you know, wear a mask if you want to wear a mask. I don't know if this is going to make any difference in America in terms of people even trying to wear masks at anything. There's so many events going on, videos being shared, the beach is full of people. Nobody's got a mask on. Now, there's obviously places in the USA where folk are wearing masks, and in Canada, obviously, because Guelph, it sounds like Guelph was ahead of the curve in terms of like, okay, we've just decided you people should be wearing masks. Now, a local anecdote to tell you about, I happened to be going past the UC bus loop, and somebody was going full on Karen and on one of the drivers. Bless the drivers, because they're putting up with so much these days. But I was like, if you don't want to wear the mask, just very quietly don't wear the mask. Why do you have to make a big demonstration about yourself about it? And if somebody says, you know, well, you probably should have a mask on, I don't know why people feel they have to take it to that
A
TikTok level of flip out, where you're definitely going to end up on the internet. And I know tensions are high, and there's a lot of still uncertainty in the air. But all told, it sounds like wearing a mask is a really good idea. And I don't know why there are so many people want to fight it so hard.
Yeah, I don't know why either. It's about safety, right? And I guess the closest analogy there is that we've had this fight every time we've had to change society or change behavior to address something that we used to do without thinking, but then evidence shows us that it's actually safer to do it another way. And I'm thinking specifically of things like seatbelts and airbags, bike helmets, smoking in restaurants, drunk driving, these were acceptable social behaviors, and then science changes its mind, and or new evidence, I should say, comes out, and so it's forced to change certain assumptions, and the behavior changes, and yeah, people threw a fit when they found out they had to buckle up their seatbelt, but now it's second habit, and everybody does. And I wonder if we're going to be dealing with this long enough. I have a feeling like that maybe we are.
Yep.
That wearing a mask is going to have to be second behavior. Like, is it fun? No. Especially on a hot day like this, going outside with a mask on? Absolutely not. If given the choice between the two, I would not do it. However, given the choice of, you know, being locked up indoors for another 3 months and wearing a mask, yeah. And you're right, the evidence that is sort of pointing to that, you know, along with hand washing, this is the best way to ensure that you are not spreading this disease, which granted is not deadly, but...
Well, not deadly to everyone, but...
Not deadly to everyone, yeah.
Half a million people worldwide would argue otherwise, but yeah.
Right, yeah, but you know...
You mean in general, yeah.
And in general, and especially to the people you're talking about now, that like the majority of COVID patients are young people now, you yourself may not like go down for the count wearing a ventilator mask and all that. However, you do know people who are vulnerable. The people who are older, people who have issues with their immune systems, who are immunocompromised. It's for their protection, not necessarily yours. And I find it silly, like these people who, like the viral video from this Florida City Council meeting of people like screaming about their freedom and the hoax and
yes,
you know, my God given right to breathe, and it's like, it's wearing a mask. Why are you so upset?
And I think even a worse subset, and we've seen it in town here too, the spitting on the Uber driver, the spitting on the person at the, or coughing on the person at the waiting pool, somebody just doing their job and some clown walks by and coughs. There's been several viral videos of people coughing, and they are even bigger idiots than the ones that flip out about wearing the mask, in my view. But yeah, it's probably, they call it the non-pharmaceutical arsenal, right? We've got the hand washing, masks, and distancing. These are the three simple things that we can do. They're virtually free to keep this in check and keep it at bay. And there are still people that want to fight wearing a mask. And yeah, there's that argument too, that people are, oh, I have a medical condition. And then there will be viral videos of people with medical conditions saying, I have asthma and I'm on inhalers, or I have a breathing problems, but I happen to be a PSW, or I'm a worker, I wear the mask, I'm still alive, just wear the mask. And we've seen both sides of it with the salon situation. There was a salon in the U.S., I can't remember what state, Missouri, where two of the workers at the salon had COVID. And they had something like 140, 150 clients through. They had six co-workers. And no one else caught it. Why? Because they were following protocols, and they figured the masks were probably number one that kept the people from there or within the salon getting COVID. And then we have the Kingston case. Mm-hmm. Of it sounds like four. It started off with one nail parlor, and now it's four, because I guess the people that work on those are contractors, so they probably move around to different places. It sounds like, by the sounds of it, none of these nail parlors, I don't know for a certainty, but if there's that much COVID being spread around these places, it sounds like they didn't do anything, and now a whole bunch of people in Kingston, which had a very low number of cases, almost none, and I think they did have none for a period of time now, are having an outbreak. So there's two examples right there of things that we are obviously, I don't know how really you need your nails done, but you know, there are lots of haircut for sure. Let's say haircut for sure. Situations like that where you're going to go in and get a trim, you know, the mask on, fine. If not, there's going to be a problem. You're going shopping, you don't have masks on, there will be problems.
Right.
And I don't know what it's going to take other than, oh, it could be like, was it in New York where the people were screaming at the woman to get out of the store?
Yeah.
And she went full on Karen as well. But yeah, there's definitely lots of entertainment out there, but not good though, because she could get it as well as give it, right? It's not just that, you know, it's a two-way thing, right?
Well, Kingston's a great example because they had, I think, 63 cases of COVID-19, and they were one of these places because Toronto passed a bylaw to make masks mandatory indoors in public places. And you have Peel Region, Mississauga, Brampton, and Caledon also looking at mandatory mask bylaws. But they first went to the province and said, yo, province, can you make this a province-wide thing so that we're not doing like piecemeal stuff, so we're not having to have 444 different bylaws? And or even in the case of Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph, where it was just simply an order of the medical officer of health. So they went to the province, and Doug Ford said, it's going to be difficult to enforce. And, you know, not all, you know, different areas are suffering differently after all, and not all areas in Ontario are getting the same amount of COVID. It's like people were pointing to Kingston. Here's an example of an Ontario town where everything's kosher. I've been using kosher a lot today, but that's okay. Where everything's cool here in Kingston, and then boom, somebody goes to the nail salon, and they have an increase in cases of about 50%, like 27 people are tested positive for COVID, 63 original cases. You know, that's pretty damning. Granted, it's anecdotal too, but you know, still, as we're trying to respond rapidly to things going on with COVID-19, you would think it'd be compelling enough for the broader Ontario government to think seriously about enacting rules too, especially, you know, seeing what's going on in the United States, where what happens where you open too quickly, you don't give the right medical advice, and all of a sudden you have 50,000 new cases in a single day.
Well, Adam, I hope you'll contribute to my bail fund, because I think if anybody coughs on me out in public these days consciously, it's going to get ugly. So please wear your mask, people. That's just my own personal PSA. I'm going to protect you, and you will protect me if we all wear our masks.
Wear your mask before Scotty finds you.
Yeah. You might not know what I look like with my mask on, but it's going to be like that phone call from Taken, and there won't be any, there won't be as much talking. So anyhow, Adam, we have come to the top of the hour. Where can people find out more about you and what you do in this town and all that?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, and you can go to GuelphPolitico.ca for Guelph news and politics stuff.
Excelente. And I'm Scotty Hertz on Twitter, Scotty Hertz on Facebook, and you can find us here every Thursday at 5. Virtually here, but definitely here on CFRU 93.3 FM for Open Sources. Join us next week and for the foreseeable, maybe till the year 2036, we're not sure. But anyway, take care, and we will be back next week with another show.